This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bob, it's time for Destiny's Child. Andrew Destin from the Post Gazette.
You can Nostradamus, read,
you can read his stuff at postgazette.com, himself and the Noah Constrictor, Noah Hiles, and it's very good stuff, I might add. Andrew, thanks for joining us again, my friend. Let's talk about Andrew Heaney and what this might mean. My Spidey sense goes up on this. I like the move. He's a pretty good pitcher. You know, he's a three or a four maybe on a decent team. But I'm wondering if this means they're setting up a trade, perhaps. If this sets up a trade for involving a guy like a Mitch Keller or even a Jared Jones to get a young impact bat in this lineup. Am I misreading that?
I don't think so, and thanks as always for having me on, Joe. Great talking with you guys. I personally don't. I think this is more just bolstering what's already, you know, the strength of the Pirates, and if you feel so inclined to make a move, maybe you can do that midway through the year. Maybe if you feel so inclined, you can before regular season games get underway. But I think in reality what this does is it addresses a need within the starting rotation that may not have been as obvious, from the outside looking in, but I think is a real one in that they don't have a whole lot of left-handed starting pitching options that are either at the big league level or waiting in the minor leagues that are really close to getting there. And if there was one complaint that you would have about the rotation last year or as it's currently constructed this year, it's that the only left-handed option was Bailey Falter. And Bailey Falter last year set a career high in innings and, you know, proved he can be a major league starter. But you have to wonder, is that, you know, a given that he can replicate that last year? If Falter, for lack of better phrasing, falters this year, and you have to feel like he goes to the bullpen or he gets shelved for an extended period of time, the last thing is you want it to be, you know, a five-man rotation where it's all righties and you don't really have any variability. Falter played really well off of that, where he's kind of the antithesis to a Skeens, a Jones, a Keller to a lesser extent. Heaney, I think what he does, he diversifies the rotation. I'm sure if you feel like you can make a trade, it makes the Pirates more capable of doing as much, but I don't necessarily think that means there's anything imminent on the trade front from the starting pitching group.
Andrew, because of his presence, if someone came to the Pirates and said, look, we know you need hitting. We have a couple of bats or a bat. I want Thomas Harrington. I want Brandon Ashcraft. I want one of your blue chip pitching prospects because I need it. Would they be willing to discuss?
Tough to say. I think the franchise recognizes that pitching is its strength. It's what it does well. And it's also something that if they move a guy, they can, you know, they can move on from it. They can live, as evidenced by the Luis Ortiz trade back in December, that they are willing to deal from a position of strength and part ways with a guy who had proven himself to be a major league starter. When it comes to the prospect side, we've seen that Ben Charrington throughout his tenure as a GM in Pittsburgh or Boston or his other stops in front offices, that he's fairly risk averse to dealing prospects. It's more so that if they're going to add a guy, it's more so through free agency. Obviously, that hasn't quite been the case in Pittsburgh, but I bring that up to say that, sure, I think they'd be willing to listen on any trade offer, but in terms of dealing a prospect for a bat straight up, it'd have to be somebody with club control. It'd have to be somebody on a relatively affordable contract, because I just don't see a reality where a guy like Thomas Harrington or Braxton Ashcraft gets dealt straight up. A, because I don't know that's a good enough return for the other team that's making the deal, and B, if the Pirates really want to part ways with guys like that.
I mean, at some point you have to part ways with somebody. I wonder, Andrew, if we've, this is, you know, on top of everything else, if in this era the Pirates' strength is starting pitching, and it happens to come at a time when in the history of baseball starting pitching is less important than it's ever been. That's my question here. Like, how important still is starting pitching? These guys only go an average of 5-some innings. Even the best pitchers are up, what, at 6? You still got 3 innings to kill.
Yeah, I think the starting pitching is an interesting point, because it's less so about the rotation as it is the cluster of arms that you can assemble. And what I mean by that is, look at the bullpen, right? You've got guys like Carmen Majinski and Kyle Nicholas who were starters throughout their time in the minors, and then they moved to the bullpen and have become integral bullpen pieces. And who's to say that that's not Mike Burrows' future, or Braxton Ashcraft, guys who have dealt with injuries but maybe could be really reliable relievers in a bulk role. I think it's more so the Pirates are willing to move off of guys on the pitching side. We've seen it with Ortiz. We've seen it with other pitching prospects. But maybe it'll be those lower rungs, guys like Michael Kennedy and Josh Hartle, who weren't necessarily top 10 prospects on any prospect ranking service. I think what you're looking at is they want to be as strong of a pitching team as possible. Now, does that look traditional with a 5-man rotation with 5 guys going 200 innings? I don't think those days are here in 2025, but I think they want to keep it in-house. They recognize that they are doing a good job of developing guys, and maybe that's pushing guys to middle relief, long relief, setup man type of roles where you can maximize, you can get the best out of your pitching staff, and manage the innings of young guys. Like, that's an important point here, too, I think, is that people like Paul Skenes, Jared Jones, et cetera, these are young guys at the end of the day. Sure, Skenes looks like he's built to throw 250, 300 innings, but at the end of the day, you don't want to overextend these guys. The more pitching that you can hang on to, the more you can ease the burden on guys that you intend on being part of your starting rotation for years to come.
I hear you. There's a lot there, man. We could have many discussions on that. I want to pitch Paul Skenes as many innings as I can in the short window the Pirates have him. And that may sound like, you know, you're using up a guy, but that's what he wants to do. That's what I want to do. The rotation itself, though, I think, Andrew, there's this presumption by people that this is some unbelievable rotation. Potentially, it could be very good. Skenes, I'll be blown away if he's anything but generational again. But after that, Bob Smizek tweeted this out. Mitch Keller, his last 9 starts last year, that's almost 2 months of starts, a 7.29 ERA. Bailey Falter, last 9 starts, 5.64 ERA. And Jared Jones, his last 6 starts, an ERA of almost 6. You know, I'm not just writing this in pen that they're going to have some unbelievably great rotation.
Right. And I think that's the correct take by you, Joe, because it's kind of a, let's see it, prove it, showed over a 32-game start schedule for these guys. I think that's the important takeaway, is that, sure, on paper, could this be among the best rotations in Pirates history? Absolutely. But is it going to be lengthened out enough? Is it healthy enough? Is it deep enough that when you get to those meaningful games in August and September that you don't stumble the way the Pirates did last year? I mean, that forgettable month of August really crippled them, right? It buried what otherwise had the makings of being a decent, if not a successful season, because, frankly, the rotation came up short, because the other aspects of the team didn't pull their weight the way that they were capable of or didn't exceed expectations. The offense never really got going. The fielding was mediocre. On the pitching side, yeah, it kind of stumbled. So I think the way to look at it is it could be excellent. It could be great. However, it has not proven as much at the big league level over a full 162-game season, because look at last year. If you do collective combined team ERA from the starting rotation, I believe last year the Pirates were 15th. That's quite literally middle of the pack. So could they be top 10 in baseball, top 5? Absolutely. But until proven otherwise, you have to kind of meet it with skepticism, and I kind of commend you on that one, Joe.
So, Andrew, I want to talk about something they won't be top five in hitting. They have major holes in their lineup. They need power. They need a lot of things. Where is Henry Davis in all of this? Because it seems to me that, you know, number one overall pick, it seems like he's almost a forgotten man. What would it take for him to be on the roster this year?
Honestly, I think just a really good spring training could go a long way for him. Yes, Joey Bart is the presumptive number one catcher, and Ben Charrington said as much at a media scrum about a week ago that Bart has earned the right to be one of the two catchers, which kind of signaled that it will only be two catchers rather than carrying three. Me, personally speaking, I came into spring training thinking that Andy Rodriguez was going to be the backup guy because you could move him around, he could DH, he could play a little first base, that position flexibility stuff. I've kind of changed my tune on that and think Rodriguez might be starting the year in the minors. So right now I think it's between Henry Davis and Jason DeLay in terms of that backup catcher position. And Henry Davis looks good. I got to give credit where it's due. The swing is as good as I've seen it. When he was in the minors, even when he was excelling, it was clear that he was trying to pull the ball with every swing, at least in batting practice, live BP sessions. He is much more to all fields. He's trying consciously to hit the ball up the middle to the opposite field, etc. It's not going to be easy. He's going to have his work cut out, and he'll have to prove to the Pirates that, hey, it is in their interests and his best interest to not necessarily be an everyday guy, but somebody who, you know, is in the lineup sporadically and can contribute and maybe ultimately gets into kind of a timeshare with Joey Bart where they each start, you know, 50% of the games. Remains to be seen. But I think Henry Davis, we are a number of years away from, well, maybe not a number of years, a year or so away from truly being able to say this guy is a bust and it's time to give up on him. And I use that just simply because Joey Bart was drafted by the Giants in 2018, and they didn't cut ties with him until 2024. That's a solid 5 to 6 year run that they gave him. Davis was drafted in 2021. We haven't hit 4 years yet that he's been in the organization.
But so, it does tell you that maybe sooner rather than later, or later rather than sooner, depending on how you look at these guys, that he still might have some. Joey Bart, you know, at least here, has shown signs that maybe he was worth where they drafted him. And maybe that's, you know, I'm just a little bit confused about their position on him. And I also wonder if he, let's say hypothetically, that he has a great spring hitting the baseball. Is there any chance that he takes over as DH for Andrew McCutchen? I realize this is a nostalgic guy on the roster, all that stuff. But at some point, you have to make way for the young kids, don't you? And what happens if that's the case and if he's not looked at as a number two catcher?
I don't think he'll ever supplant Andrew McCutchen as the DH here, and it's not just sentimental reasons. I think last year he proved that he still has something to give. There's still a little bit left in the tank. Now, that being said, I do not anticipate Andrew McCutchen to be playing more than 100 games this year, maybe 110. He is going to get his rest days. They're not going to try to overextend him because when they do, they run into troubles, as evidenced by in 2023 and a little bit in 24. It is in the team's interest and his best interest to rest him as much as possible and not overuse him, which is why I say that, yeah, I think Henry Davis, there is an opportunity for him to be on the big league roster from the outset, because if he catches 2 to 3 times a week and gets 1 or 2 DH starts, you're looking at anywhere between 3 to 5 starts a week in theory if the Pirates want to go that route. So I think, yeah, it's a good problem to have if Joey Bart has inserted himself into the equation like he has alongside Henry Davis and Andy Rodriguez. I think what the Pirates really are doing right now is, hey, let the best man win. Let's put this as an open competition outside of Bart, figure out if one of these two guys really has it and can stick at the position, and if not, they can pivot from there and move them around if necessary. Those conversations, as far as I'm concerned, not taking place yet, but from the catching standpoint, they view both guys, Davis and Rodriguez, as catchers moving forward and going to see what they have in them.
Interesting.
Man, we're talking to Andrew Destin from the Post-Gazette a year and a half ago or so, or at least right before they drafted Skeens. Davis and Rodriguez were the top two prospects in the whole organization, and now they could both start in the minors. Why would Endy start in the minors? He can't find a spot?
No, it's more just, I mean, look at last year, right? He played, what, 10 games in the minors? Kudos to him for coming back from the elbow injury. The right elbow, you know, kept him out most of all of 24. But the game action was relatively limited. The elbow looks good. He's throwing to the bases well. The swing looks fine. I think it's more so just a matter of you don't want to rush the guy, because we have to remember, Andy Rodriguez is only 24 years old. So if you introduce him to major league game action from the outset and things don't go well, that can really, you know, take a toll on a young man's confidence who really hasn't appeared in that many big league games. I don't think it's a matter of, hey, the Pirates are giving up on Andy Rodriguez. I think we're several years away from that kind of a conversation. I think what this is more about is he needs some time. Let him build it up in AAA, get him 100 at-bats or so, and allow him to come up at some point in May or June or whenever the Pirates need him, and he is the best version of himself, one who is hot, on a tear, can tear the cover off the ball, because we know that Andy Rodriguez is capable of that. At least he showed as much in the minor leagues. So I think it's more so that they are going to give him some time and not rush him versus bring him up to the big leagues and have him focus solely on catching, get that sporadic playing time, and it kind of hampers the development of a guy who really still needs everyday catching reps.
It's your turn, Bob.
Okay. I want to talk about Keith Brian Hayes then, because I know, you know, Andrew, every year we expect things from him offensively, and it seems that it just doesn't happen because of this injury. This injury, is it one of those that will never get to the point where he is beyond it, or is it just one of those things that will pop up once in a while and really make it difficult for him to put together a complete season?
I think it's more so the latter. But I don't want to jump to conclusions and bet against anybody. That's not to suggest that Ke'Bryan Hayes is going to be a 30-homer, 120 RBI guy moving forward. But I think what you're looking at is he is in a better spot in terms of managing his back. It genuinely, he looks to be in the best shape that we've seen him. And again, it's spring training, right? You know, best shape of your life, talk in February. But he looks happy. He looks content. He looks pleased with the offseason work that he put in with the lower back, with the core issues. The two-hand follow-through on the swing is nothing to ignore. I mean, he has not done that at the major league or minor league level because he was limited physically, because he didn't feel confident enough that he could rotate that much and finish and follow through in that manner. So I look at it as, yeah, he may not be a 150-game starter. This isn't going to be an Ironman. He's not going to break any Cal Ripken Jr. records, but I think Ke'Bryan Hayes can still be a contributor for this team. He still can be worth the contract that he is being paid, which, you know, on the surface was a bargain at the time, but maybe is proving to be more in line with what his value could be to this team. I really think the most important takeaway is not what Ke'Bryan Hayes can do offensively moving forward. It's can he return to being a Gold Glove guy? Last year, he was an average defender. Jared Triolo, frankly, if you look at the advanced metrics, was just as good, if not better, defensively at third. So can Ke'Bryan Hayes return to being that Gold Glove caliber guy? And then anything on the offensive side you get if he stays healthy is greatly appreciated.
Bob, may I engage Andrew in a game of free association?
It's always free. Yes.
It don't cost nothing. Andrew, let's go five words or less on these if you could. Are you ready?
Always.
Tamar Johnson, where does he start the season?
Double-A Altoona.
Where does he finish the season?
Triple-A Indianapolis.
What's his time of arrival in Pittsburgh?
Mid-2026 or late 2026.
Is he still as highly regarded as he was the day he was drafted?
Yes.
Does Bubba Chandler start the season in the rotation?
No.
When do we see him?
May or June.
And then what happens? Who comes out of the rotation, assuming they're all healthy? Who's the guy in the most danger of coming out of the rotation is the best way to phrase it.
Bailey Falter.
Do we start the season with Keller, Jones, Skeens, Falter, and Heaney?
Yes.
Might we see a six-man rotation?
I wouldn't bet on it.
Who's going to be the setup guy to David Bednar? I'm assuming he's the closer automatically, yes?
Holderman, but maybe Nicklaus.
Hmm. Very interesting. DJ Stewart, is he going to be the first baseman? And if not, who is?
Yes. If not, then York.
Holy horse. Ooh. Follicles.
Well, at least they're using prospects.
How about right field? Prospects. These guys are 30 years old,
all right,
Bob.
But I mean, people in their system. As opposed to bringing in a bunch of guys on a one-year contract and signing them for $4 million and wasting the money.
I know. Who's going to be in right field, Andrew?
Reynolds.
I mean, what's the outfield across now?
Left field. It'll be Pham, Cruz, Reynolds.
That's right. Reynolds is in left. What do you think of Tommy Pham in right?
Yeah.
What do you think of Tommy Pham in left?
Could work. Need to see it.
Could if it
work,
doesn't.
Need to see it.
That if it doesn't. If it doesn't.
Try Sawinski, York, or Cook.
Dear God. how does Kiner Falefa look like an everyday shortstop to you?
Remains to be seen.
You're very high on Billy Cook, Ron's long-lost son. Why?
Position versatility, elite defender.
Bob, I have no further questions to you.
I would like to follow up on one of them, if
sure,
you don't mind, Counselor.
Please.
And that would be, you asked about Kiner Falefa. What about Gonzalez? What is he? Is he a guy who is trending upwards? Do you think he could be a sustainable guy or
we
not?
We don't have time for a long answer, Bob. I'm getting in trouble here.
You've
right
already
here.
Gone through. I understand
I know,
that, but
he
you've
went
blown
short
the
answers.
Clock management already. There's no shame. Okay, real quick, Andrew.
Yeah. Nick Gonzalez can certainly play shortstop in a pinch. I don't think he's an everyday guy there. He's best suited as an everyday second baseman, and he's improved a lot there. But I think his range with his size, he's just kind of limited to be an everyday shortstop.
Yes or no, Bednar going to regain his all-star form?
Yes.
Thank you, Andrew. I have no further questions.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks
Destiny's
for talking.
Destiny's Child never, ever disappoints.
What a man he is, huh, Bob?
Yeah, I mean, he's very thorough. I like that about him, and
he's good.
And you know, there are things that we sit here and talk about that he's covering a team, and he sees what they're doing, and that's what we want. We want insight about what they're thinking.
Yes,
but and there's a lot of it that I agree with. There's a ton of it I don't agree with, just because I don't know. I still think this lack of hitting is a problem, and I would go out of my comfort zone to try to acquire a bat somehow.
I heard you talking about Vladimir Guerrero the other
day.
Well,
I did that because it was a beautiful day, and I was daydreaming, and I thought, this won't happen, but why not talk about it?
Well, what would have to
happen? Toronto is 25. Toronto can't figure out a way to sign him.
Yeah.
It's going to cost a lot.
Yeah.
But my point is, if you add even $50 million a year to your payroll, where does that take you? And I looked at all of them, and it's right in the middle of the pack, if that. It still might be 18 to 20.
What do you think?
You could afford it if you wanted to.
If you wanted. What do you think of Smyzik's tweet about how three of those five guys desperately struggled down the stretch last year in
their
rotation?
Yeah, I think that's – and maybe that's why they don't want to part with the guys in their system. But at some point, don't you have to do something for your offense, Joe? I could see them leading the league in one-run losses. That's how good I think the pitching can be. And if it is, you can see a lot of 3-2, 2-1, 4-3 games.
Bob, the lineup is a disaster. Why is anybody saying anything differently?
Well, I'm just saying –
it's a total disaster.
Which is why I'm – talking about getting bats, whatever it would take to get bats.
By the way, I hope this is the case because he seems like a good guy and he was really good here. But Joey Bart is 28 years old and has had three good months in the major leagues. Are we
right.
totally sold that he's an everyday catcher?
Well, they are.
As much as you can have one?
They are.
Are they?
Well, they said he's going to be their starting catcher.
He's going to be one of two, they said. Yeah.
So.
And then what?
They can only hope that he does have that kind
of
sustainability.
Yeah, I hope he does. But all of major league history tells me that when a guy comes up that late and at the age of 28 on his resume has three good months of baseball, that's certainly not a sure thing.
Well, look, they have potentially a hole there in terms of offense. First base, who knows what DJ Stewart's going to give you or anyone else. Horwitz when he comes back. Second
DJ
base,
Stewart
shortstop, you don't have a lot of power there. Third base, you'd never know what you're going to get. What do you have in terms of guaranteed power?
You have one guy.
Do you
guy.
Know the Pirates have not had a 40 home run guy since
yes, I do.
52 years ago?
I went up to Josh Bell's locker a million years ago and asked him about that, and it's still the case. I said, remember,
in this day and age, people are hitting the ball everywhere, and
I
the
know.
Pirates cannot get a guy who hits, you know, 40, let alone 30.
Josh Bell almost hit 40 home runs in May that year. So I went up and basically said to him, listen, you're going to be the first guy since, what is it, 74, 72?
Yeah, Willie Stargell.
What year was it?
74.
I said, you're probably going to be this guy unless things go horribly wrong. Well, guess what, Bob? Things went horribly wrong.
They need power. They got to come up with it somewhere.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Along with Austin Bechtel behind the glass, it's the Pomp and Joe Show here on a Monday. We've had an engaging conversation so far about the Pirates and their intentions going into this with Andrew Destin of the Post-Gazette. We've also talked about Albert Breer's report concerning the Steelers being one of four teams interested in Matthew Stafford. For my money, I'm going to throw in the Vikings, just because I think they're a team that could use a quarterback of that caliber for this year coming up. I look at them as a contender. They were last year. And so Joe Matthew Stafford is one of those guys who can help a team like the Vikings. Although the Steelers, the Browns, the Giants, the Raiders are all teams looking for quarterbacks, I still think tomorrow when Omar Khan speaks at the Combine, yeah, that I don't know that we're going to get many specific answers about any of this, other than there is a need to improve their team. What would you expect him to say when asked about the quarterback situation? If you asked that question, what do you think Omar would ask, how he would answer
it? Not much is what I would say. You know, they're on the record basically as, at least Art is, as mm-hmm. saying he
one
thinks the
two.
Starting quarterback right. is internal right now. I'm sure he's going to say we're open to any and all options. I just don't know. If Matthew Stafford has several suitors, would you rather play for Kevin O'Connell in that offense or for Mike Tomlin and Artie Smith in this offense? Would you rather have Justin Jefferson Jefferson and Jordan Addison
right.
or George
Pickens?
That's
why Pickens? I think the Vikings make better sense, only because they're in it right now. They're debating whether or not they should give Darnold big money or J.J.
Right.
McCarthy. They could also make J.J. McCarthy part of a trade if they want, or they could just say, look, we're going to go 2 years with him and you'll eventually get your shot, not unlike what Jordan Love had to go through, or for that matter, Aaron Rodgers under Brett Favre. So that to me is a position, because it's a little bit in flux and they need it, despite all their talent they have, they're in a position to win now. He would give them the best chance, I think, of all the quarterbacks out there.
The Steelers?
No.
Or the Vikings?
The Vikings.
Yeah. I mean, I think he would give a lot of teams their best chance.
But I mean, don't you think the Vikings are closer than any of these teams mentioned?
Yeah, they're already there. They just won.
That's what I'm saying. That's why it's the one move that I think would help them a lot.
50-minute mark brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19, Peters Township. Chris Carter of the Post-Gazette coming up, top of the hour, and I'm going to ask him about Pitt things, Bob. He's also well-versed on Steelers, on a bunch of stuff. He's very good, Chris Carter. NFL draft,
yes,
he's great on. But Pitt, what do we make of this situation right now? Alan Green is the new athletic director. He was on this station, I believe, with Pat Bostic maybe 3 weeks ago, and he said that football and men's basketball represent the, quote, front porch of the university. Bob, if that's the case, a renovation might be in order of the front porch here. Jeff Capel looks to be headed for his sixth NCAA tournament miss in 7 years. Horrible game the other day. And we know the state of Pitt football right now. I think all you need to know is that since the day Pat Narduzzi signed his new contract that will last forever or until 2030, whichever comes first, he's 16-19 against major college competition, including 10-14 in the ACC. So here's the dilemma, Bob, that I want to ask you about as I see it. Both these guys are signed through 2030. Capel, quote, at least that long, based on the statement the school made when they signed him. The buyout for Narduzzi is said to be prohibitive. There seems to be some confusion whether Capel has a buyout or whether you just owe him the rest of his contract if you got rid of him. Either way, they would owe him tons of money.
Mm-hmm.
Pitt does not seem to be in a position right now where they can go throwing around money for coaches who aren't working for them. You may have heard the $240 million Victory Heights project has become a little bit of an issue. And they're paying Narduzzi and Capel a combined $11 million. And this was the reason Green was hired, I think. They need to make bigger and better strides in terms of paying athletes So Pitt is under a lot of financial stress right now, which means that Allen Green, even if he wanted to move on from one of these guys, might be prohibited from doing so, to which I would ask, why have an athletic director then? Thoughts?
Well, totally. I mean, that's the problem with these long-term contracts and the money that you have to pay to get out of them. I still go back to West Virginia. I think they held on to their head coach one final year before they got rid of Brown, just because, you know, Neil Brown, the buyout was big, and it was lesser one year later. So they figured, wait one year and save money. When you stuck, when you're in this position, there's not much you can do. Given the fact that they've already said they're looking at $20 million in NIL funding, well, where is that going to come from? Who's going to be willing to do it of the people who support the program? Knowing that the buyout would be probably a lot more than that on either of these guys, who's going to come up with that money? You just can't do it, so they're kind of stuck in this situation.
Well, here's the dilemma, based on what you just said. The people who have to open their checkbooks to pay for the buyout, maybe, or
are the
help,
same people who are the same people, NIL.
Right?
Right.
So would they be, if you keep these coaches, are those people going to say to themselves, "Checkbook closed, I'll open it if you get new coaches"? It's a financial dilemma either way. Either you have to pay these enormous buyouts, or you have to risk alienating your main donors. And I'm not positive that's the case at all. I'm just saying that would be a risk, and I imagine some people who help fund Pitt Athletics are getting real tired of the product on the field,
right,
and on the court.
And normally there are just a handful of guys who have the kind of cash and bling to make that happen, and they may get tired of doing it that way. You know, some of these other places, go down to Alabama in football, they have a ton of people who are willing to contribute to it, so it makes their margin for error a little bigger when it comes to these sorts of things. I don't know where they go, and I don't know what kind of power Allen Green has. Like, can he do it? He needs someone to help him do it. He could be a great fundraiser, but you better figure out how to solve some of your debts first before you can fundraise, because people are going to – you can't do both. You can't ask people to help in projects and then go back to them and say, we need to get, you know, money available for this and that, whatever.
Players or buy. I mean, it's just – It doesn't seem like a great financial situation. It seems like he might be in a bind. My guess is he would want to move on from Narduzzi based on Allen Green's history when he moved on from Gus Malzahn, for example. He had, granted, maybe different expectations in the SEC, but he moved on from him with a better record than Narduzzi. I just think he's stuck right now. Chris Carter is coming on from the Post-Gazette here at noon, Bob. Tells me he doesn't think Pitt would be in position to move on from either guy financially until after the 2027 season.
That's right. It's lesser of a burden if you wait. But then if you wait, what are you going to do here in terms of trying to replenish the program with people who could come in and make a difference?
I don't know.
It's a really difficult situation to try to analyze. And again, did you hear the comments of Tony Bennett, you know, of Virginia, how he says, I'm not made to do this. He goes, I totally respect athletes who get paid. They should. But this thing is completely out of control.
Right. I wish Tony Bennett had come to that conclusion before he quit on his team right before a season.
I'm saying is you hear that a lot now, and it is out of control. Now, here's one way to make this happen, Joe. If you believe that you're stuck, you ask both Pat Narduzzi and Jeff Capel to contribute to the NIL with their own personal money. We're paying you $3-4 million, whatever it is, a year. You give back $1 million to help us out here. Or we kind of restructure things. I don't know. Is it possible to do that?
I have not heard of that.
Can they do that?
That's almost beyond my scope of imagination.
Well,
you're asking a guy
asking
to give
you
back
for
a
ideas.
Third of
I'm asking you for ideas. These are the people who are begging people out there to support their
Find
program.
The money.
Find the money. They can contribute some of the money.
Ask the people who are funding your athletic department, what would you rather pay for here? Buyouts or athletes? Like, what are your priorities? You know what I mean?
I'm saying if what Chris says is true and they're not in any position to change in 2 years, get the head coaches to fund some of their own problems.
I can't imagine that.
They won't do it. I get it. But I'm just asking for ideas to come up with the cash. How do you do it? If you tell Jeff Capel or Pat Narduzzi, look, at some point we're going to have to part ways here because we can't. You can extend this and give yourself more of an opportunity if you help us bring in the kind of people you need.
If I'm Jeff Capel, I would say no thanks. Taking a third of my salary, you'll just pay me to leave. That's what I'll take. I'll take your money.
You're
and
probably
leave.
Right.
I don't know.
What else would you do?
I do agree
How
that
do you
have
solve
to be
this?
Creative. I don't know. It's a bind. That's the whole topic. They're in a bind because of Heather Like.
I think it goes beyond Heather Like. I think it's
who signed those guys through 2030?
Well, I mean, you have to get approval, don't you?
Okay, then put it on Patrick Gallagher, then?
I guess. I mean, it can't just be one person deciding, I'm going to write this check, here you go, we're going to get in. There's a board of directors, there's a lot of things involved in this.
Okay, so. but Heather Like was the driving force between...
Yes.
For both of those contracts.
Someone still has
and
to sign off.
And for Victory Heights, I might add.
But she's not the only one.
I know.
There are a lot of people involved in that who thought it was a good idea and they can get it done.
Your athletic director is the one who's pushing for it, though, selling it.
But someone has to agree to it, has more power than she does.
Okay, then put it on Patrick Gallagher.
I'm just saying.
Well, who's it on?
I don't know.
One of those two.
It's on, but there's a board that has to decide on this, too. If a board decides this is not good for us, we ultimately, the board of directors in any of these organizations, have a big say. They need votes to...
Okay, then we answered our own question. Your own question there is it's up to the board of directors moving forward. What are they prioritizing?
And how do you do
it? If indeed that's the way it works.
Not just prioritizing.
I'm not letting Heather Like off the hook.
I'm not trying to, but I'm saying if you're going to pin it all on her, you would be wrong. There's other people involved. Other people are involved who have to okay a lot of this. You can't just come in and say, do you think Andrew Green right now, if he wanted to, can just say, I'm going to get rid of everyone here, we're going to pay? Do you think
no,
the board of directors
because of what
say?
Heather Like did.
Okay, but again, someone has to approve even what his next move
so when
is.
They make, when the athletic director makes a great move, a great hire, do we credit the athletic director or the board of directors?
I understand how, I'm just telling you, there is a chain of command that has to be respected.
I get
this.
That, I do, but it would be very unusual, for example, if this guy... If they didn't know him, you know, who knows how much. And Alan Green, as a new athletic director, said, I want to fire Pat Narduzzi. Let's say Narduzzi had 3 years left. It would be very unusual for the board to say, no, you can't do that.
Would you be interested to find out, because I don't know the answer to this, how many years Alan Green got? Because if you're going to come here knowing this is the exact situation you find yourself, I would think that I'd need more years to get it done. And I would have to imagine he has a long-term contract. Does he?
I don't know.
We could ask Chris.
We'll ask Chris Carter
that.
We'll ask Chris Carter all of this.
Would you
move on from either or both coaches right now if it weren't for the buyouts?
Probably yes.
Both?
Probably yes. It's just been time, you know. I don't know how. I knew when Kevin Stallings, you knew that wasn't going anywhere quickly, and they had to do something about it, and they did. They bought him out. I have a lot of respect for both guys. I think they know football a lot, but I also know that we talk about coaches all the time and whether or not the time is now. I don't see how this changes much in the next several years.
Citibank, would you move on from one or both right now?
I mean, it's got to be a consideration, but with the financial ramifications.
No financial ramifications. Would you move on from both if there were none?
I would give Capel another year.
I'm sort of inclined to go with limits there. I would give Narduzzi would be done for me. First of all, this basketball season, although it's careening, like every other sports season we've had around here lately, pro and college, it's still too early to say it's a failure. There's still the ACC tournament, things like that. I might give Capel one more year, but Narduzzi I would have moved on from already, the way West Virginia did with Neil Brown. I would have. And Narduzzi's done more than him. I get it. But I mentioned the record since he signed his new deal. I think what's keeping him around is the financial ramifications.
So what do you do then if you're Andrew Green?
What can you do?
You focus
on NIL. That's why he was hired.
You have the same roadblocks that everyone here would have. How many people continue to fund it? How many can you recruit new people to fund this stuff?
That's his job. He better do that. That's
so
why he was brought in to convince donors
like
how to spend.
It's an elite fundraising job is what it's become.
Yeah,
it's a general
right.
manager overseeing money.
There's literal general managers
all over
college.
It has to take on a professional look now.
Yes.
With probably collective bargaining, with all the things.
Sure.
You know, so we'll see.
Yes, we will, Bob. Perhaps we won't see any coaching changes in the near future. Limits, are you okay in there? You seem somewhat traumatized.
No, I'm doing wonderful. I think it's just traumatizing for Pitt fans right now to hear this conversation with their teams going nowhere.
It might be.
I mean, if they do the right thing, coach guys up, get guys who wouldn't have... There are ways to become better. I'm not thinking that can't happen. It just, in order to compete at the highest level here in these conferences, you're going to need star players, and they cost. And they will also go out and re-recruit
themselves. They need money. They need either to open the purse strings for people who are already contributing, find new contributors, just find a way to compete. I mean, there's two sides of NIL. One is it's horrible for college sports. The other side is in college football, suddenly a team like SMU comes out of nowhere and wins. Suddenly a team like Vanderbilt through the transfer portal goes from 2-10 to going for to a bowl game for the first time in almost a decade. It also led, in my opinion, to increased parity, Bob, and can give teams that normally wouldn't have a chance a chance. Look at the SEC last year. Wouldn't you think that Alabama, they went nowhere last year. There was tons of parity in college football.
And that's a good thing. I have no problem. But I think it still makes it difficult. You got to figure out ways to come up with money, and it's never easy in this day and age.
No doubt. And that's why they hired him. Figure it out.
All right.